Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
Okay, and a very warm welcome from London for the latest in our monthly series of Talking Industry webinars and panel discussions. This morning's presentation concerns advances in safety engineering and security, and we have three excellent speakers ready to talk to you and to chat amongst themselves and to answer your questions. I'm going to introduce the speakers in reverse order. So in third place, but by no means last, you'll hear from Ian Holland, who's Managing Director of Dold Industries Limited. So Ian, if you wouldn't mind just giving us half a minute on who you are, what your company does, and then we'll move on to our second speaker.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, I'm Ian Holland. I'm Managing Director of Dold Industries in Southwood and Ferris in Essex. We exclusively cover the UK for Dold products, mainly in the safety arena with some interesting products with wireless safety. I'm going to be focusing today specifically on our STS and physical security. Thanks for having me along.
Great pleasure, and thank you for that. Ian tells me that he's actually got a good background in IT as well, so we're expecting to see him chipping in when the other speakers give their presentations as well. Our second speaker will be Peter Keckers, Strategic Account Manager for the UK and Ireland at Red Lion Controls. So just a quick over to you, Peter, for a summary.
Good morning, everyone. As Andy mentioned, Peter Keckers, Strategic Account Manager, but my history is coming through the OT and IT engineering and consultancy. And hopefully I can approach with Red Lion strategy of IT data conversions from OT world and transferring of the knowledge from OT, between OT and IT and communications, some information for you. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Peter has worked in both sides of this OT-IT fence. So in a sense, he's a dual passport holder in modern parlance. So what he has to say will be very interesting and how you deal with that boundary between two very different departments. And opening up for us today, opening the batting, will be David Dearden, who's Managing Director of Oichner. So over to you, David. And then having given your introduction, please go ahead and make your first presentation of the day.
Yes. Thanks very much. I have been on the Talking Industry panel before, so sorry for the people that have got to listen to my introduction again. But I joined Oichner 2019, right prior to Brexit, to COVID, and obviously our component supply issues that the industry has been facing. So it's been a challenging time. The thing that drives me is the changes in technology, and I'm very fortunate to be working for a company that's very progressive around safety technology, and we're seeing some of those with IO Link safety coming on board in the not too distant future, and Fieldbus safety. But of course that has its own challenges, and part of that is what we're going to be talking about today, which I'm really, really looking forward to. So Andy, the thing is, the thing that we're seeing a lot is that the safety solutions are changing in industry, from hardwired physical relay based systems now to programmable systems. Part of that is because the safety I/O points cost is coming down significantly, and also the vendors, the number of vendors that are providing programmable or configurable safety control systems is increasing. So whereas before it was relatively prohibitive to use a programmable safety system on a machine, apart from in sort of specialist circumstances. Now it's kind of becoming the norm. And if you've got a programmable controller or a PC-based control system that's doing the rest of the control function, why wouldn't you also include that in the safety functions? It just makes so much more sense. Coupled with that, of course, is that the safety systems are getting more complex. People are wanting to do more and more complex arrangements with their safety, whether it be interventions or with the advancement of automation and technology. So we talk about automation and robotics quite a lot when we're talking on other forums. But one thing that has brought is different challenges. You know, the artificial intelligence. We've been talking about the Internet of Things, but let's talk about connected devices within the factory floor. Ian just mentioned about wireless technology, especially around the safety platform, IO-Link and the like, and remote access. We're seeing so much more greater need for remote access and people to dial into their machines, whether it be the OEM or whether it be the end users, to get that granular data to put the efficiencies in place. And of course, that all creates big safety challenges for us all. The standards are catching up, as you'd expect them to do, and is indeed the legislation. So the latest regulation that's within Europe, the old machinery directive, as it becomes a regulation across Europe now, has a very, very strong focus on cybersecurity. And in fact, even when you look at the latest, the fourth edition of 13849 standard, the 2023 standard of 13849, there is a big push on the functional specifications for safety-related control systems, and we see that within the text. In the real world, I still think there's some catching up to do, and I hope that we can educate some of the people on the call today if they aren't really sure what needs doing. There is all help available from manufacturers like ourselves anyway. But, you know, making sure that you get that specification right at the front end is critical. And the validation and the verification process also extremely important as part of a programmable safety system. And then leading into that, we then bring in the cybersecurity element. And we have got standards. There's standards like IEC 62443, which looks at the cybersecurity in industrial environments. But we are seeing a bigger a presence of cybersecurity requirements, especially when we're opening up ports on the factory floor within our safety-related control systems to the world. So yeah, there's a lot to think about, and hopefully we're going to cover a fair bit of that in the next hour or so.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for an introduction, and raises more questions than it answers in many ways, I think. Let's start with the standards bit.
I mean, there are also some examples, sorry to interrupt there, but there's also some examples that are in the real world where we've seen cyber attacks on manufacturing plants, steelworks in particular. So, very, very important that you get that right, because the consequences could be devastating. Of course they could be. And if you think about the critical infrastructure we've got as well, it really does need to be considered.
Yeah, we've got a contribution already in the chat explaining the machinery directive and what's going to happen in the future to a little greater extent. Let's have a quick chat with all the speakers. You mentioned programmable safety systems, whereas, you know, what does that provide you with? What would you have beforehand? Just a dumb system that could just do one thing, and now you've got a great deal more flexibility in terms of how you can set things up, how you can change things. What do you mean specifically for the layman as to what is a programmable safety system and what does it give you?
Okay, so as the technology of our machines gets more and more complex, so does the safety requirements. If we go back a number of years, excuse me, and you opened up a control panel on the factory floor, It may have had a shoebox PLC, but it would probably be a suite of relays and contactors, and it would be quite literally relay logic, and it would be very difficult to fault find on. It would be very difficult to do any modifications on, and it was relatively unreliable because there was a lot of electromechanical moving parts. And although the general machinery control advanced into the programmable controllers and the PC-based controllers that we see of today with decentralized and remote I/O points, making that side very, very easy to configure, the safety was always left behind a little bit. Now, part of that is because it used to be acceptable that we would want to shut down a machine and we would just shut down the machine. Now it's a little bit different and people want to do different things. They have to do different things because the risk assessments or the way that the machines operate based on inertias or the way the operators interact with the machine requires them to do different things. And so the safety solutions have got a lot more complex. And to do complex controls using safety relays is quite a challenge. And again, you have the same problems that we had 20 years ago in the normal factory floor, 20 or 30 years ago in the normal factory floor, that they become, when you get complex, they become hard, difficult to maintain, unreliable. And actually then when you've got the skills gap that we're seeing as well, you find that sometimes these complex safety electromechanical systems are circumnavigated when there's a fault at 6 o'clock at night and you need to get your factory running. And then that never, ever gets resolved. Now, so the same way that we've seen standard control move into programmable, we're seeing the same with safety. And the leading manufacturers have all now got a good safety offer within their PLC range, which makes it very, very easy to have the standard control and the safety control on the same platform and all the benefits that come with that. So we can obviously send data between the standard part and the safety parts and vice versa for diagnostic purposes. So we're now getting a lot more information. We can make the changes that we need to do when we need to do them. But of course, that all comes with the caveat we've got to have greater understanding and knowledge about what we're doing, because it's very easy to put some code into a PLC that may not quite do the function that you want it to do. So when you talk about the latest version of 13849 and we're starting to look at the requirements for putting, you know, better specification at the front end, and it is really, really important, that is to try and mitigate some of the issues that we have further upstream. You know, years ago, there was a report that was produced by the Health and Safety Executive called Out of Control, and it looked at where these errors came about, and the majority of the issues came in the design and realization phases at the front end of the project, not in the realization and the operational pieces at the second end. It was down to the design. Something had gone wrong in design. And so It's really important with programmable systems we get that bit right. But, you know, we are seeing all the benefits of factory field bus technology. We're seeing a massive growth in that. And I say hopefully when IO-Link safety comes on board, that's also going to get it right down to that sensor and actuator level down absolutely on the shop floor.
But if it's programmable, doesn't that give you more flexibility to make adjustments later rather than perhaps...
There are benefits of it and also negatives for it. As Andy mentioned, there's lots of things getting more and more clever, and you do have a designated PLCs, which are safety PLCs, and you are able to communicate between safety PLCs and the control systems, for example, for the machines. But there is still, and versus of the flexibility, what you're gaining with that, there will be still a very strong push from some industries to have it hardwired. And of course, why is that? A hardwired system is still going to have a benefit of speed because it's analog and doesn't do any conversions between analog and digital world. And it's operating not with the programs and some CPUs, but it's working on the simple logics. Then there is a place, depends on the industry, where you can go digital full. and where you can only, I would say, even after wiring safety in hardwire, you still will use the digital, because the information from the hardwire system is still required. And that could be for the multiple different reasons. How you're gonna analyze what kind of safety failure you have? Imagine you could have a production line of the robots sitting in a line or going over 20, 30 meters. And then you suddenly have a alarms for the safety reasons when somebody opened the gate on different part of it, or there is some problem with where something's interfere with the robotic hands. And this is a, again, safety event which needs to be in some way summarized and understanding how the production lines is tweaked and tweezed to create you the best output. Then even the hardwired system, because the gate will be hardwired, there will be some different digital input into PLCs, safety PLC systems. How that exchange of data with the control system is, this is the important things. If in the past, it used to be hardwired, you had digital input, digital output, and the robot stopped. These days, it's not always a possibility to the robot and the production line stop, because it will have a massive impact and depends on the event. Of course, you do have a digital version of the stop button when something is life-threatening, and you can decide based on that stop whole line. But because you do have the flexibility, what David was talking about, depends that of the safety event, you can adjust the machine to work in a more safely manners. It can slow down the process, it can stop part of the process of production. And of course, that's going to have an effect on output. It's making sure when things are safe, but also making sure when you're not shutting down. And imagine you do have a furnace which is 50 meters long, full of the material, which is going to be is heat treated on 900 degrees. If you suddenly stop whole production line, that temperature is there and the material stop moving in it, what's going to happen? It's going to melt and disable your production line for 1 month, even longer, to clean it up, everything. That means you're cutting your output. You're making literally situations when you have to shut down your productions. And that's unbelievable cost. Of course, you need to understand where you need to do it and when you must do it, the shutdown. And when the shutdown is not really necessary, but by the changing the process, for example, slowing down or adding some cooling systems to slow down and cool the system before completely shut down. This is the adventures of the flexibility of program. But again, it's not what we call fast reaction, because the hardwire, the analog system, is always will be the fastest.
So there's a reason of speed not to move towards programmable, and presumably a familiarity issue as well, where people are safer with what they've got.
You need different skill sets. You need completely different skill sets to do that. Yeah. And I think David absolutely have that in the head. Soon you're going into PLCs, and you also mentioned the possibility to transfer data in OT layer, from OT to IT layer. That's completely different skill sets. While electrical engineer will be able to wire the physical safety and will be able to set it up and get it work, suddenly you need somebody who is a programmer, which may not have a clue about the wiring system and maybe not even is able to communicate and understand to person which actually do the physical wires. Then, yeah, the system becoming extremely complex. And with that extreme complexity, you need different skill sets across from different regions, from physical through the quality automation to OT, IT layer. And of course, these things we require for multiple reasons, but of course, the system have a different outcome, but also different cost. Adding all these segments, sometimes I've seen it many times, people overblowing it and making it much more robust And many times, and I'm not saying about the now the safety, which is life-threatening, but for the in the digitalization world, I have seen so many projects being overblown by doing it for the sake of technology, not for actually needs of the people, which having direct impact in a production or in industry. And to find the balance, it's not that easy. Of course, you do have all these possibilities, but is that always the best way to scale to build everything to the max? I from my point, it's not, because it's never gonna return you what you invest in it, your time, your money, and the cost of it will go so much high when you maybe can close your business because there will be nobody able to capable to buy the machine which is so overblown by specs. It could be the ideal, perfect machines for everything, but nobody will be able to buy it.
I think industry is recognizing that though, because if you know, if you take a modern OEM manufactured production machine that has technology embedded in it, not only can that come up and give great diagnostics to help and assist the maintenance operations within that plant, even relatively unskilled maintenance operations within that plant, to be able to fault find themselves, but actually it can send that information to the manufacturer of the OEM of the machine to say, hey, you know, we've got a bearing failing, it's going to fail in 3 weeks' time on this particular piece of equipment, you probably need to get a service engineer into that plant to get it repaired. And so from the manufacturer, the end user of that equipment that's making chocolate bars, crisps, or whatever else they're making, it kind of takes some of that issue and this skills gap away. And I think that you know, if organizations don't embrace it, they've got to challenge themselves anyway. One thing that does raise though is who owns that information? And I know, Andy, you and I have spoken about this before, but that information is key. And if end users don't seem to be getting to grips with machinery purchasing specifications that talk about who owns that data. So these machines are creating lots and lots of data. Data that would give a good indication of where the weaknesses are on their particular pieces of equipment. And I give a very, very basic example, and I've used this before, is that if you were a chocolate manufacturer one and you had a new production line put in by an OEM that built you all that line, and the OEM was pulling all the data out and they can see which bits are becoming unreliable and causing downtime or slowdown within the factory, they could then go to chocolate manufacturer two and say, I could put you a new line in and I know that it's going to be 18% more efficient than your competitors. And that's how valuable that data is, but someone does need to take ownership of that right now.
I think David, you're right there, but there's definitely an ethical question mark above for doing that. Not
without
saying
a doubt,
it
doesn't
happen, you know. But I've been quietly listening in the background. There's a few things I've probably got to interject at this point. You said right at the very beginning, David, about the fact that everyone's going electronic and safety based as opposed to relays. Just if you can see by my head, we make thousands, millions of relays in that building every day. Yeah. So that the reason we do that is it comes down to knowledge of people who are in the specifying market, as you said, with regard to machinery. It also comes down to cost is a very big thing, you know. With the price of energy going up, the price of resource and infrastructure spending has to go down, because fixed assets need to be fixed assets. You know, the fixed overhead costs can't flex just because energy's doubled in price. Also,
it was trends, Ian. It was trends more than anything, yeah, and the trend is definitely there. And if we look at the modern factory plants, if you were building a new car production line or a new warehousing, a logistics centre, I'd be very surprised if you based your safety-related control system on relay technology. I'm not saying you can't, but I'd be very surprised as an engineering team if you based it on that, if it was a large-scale plant. And it is just a trend.
No, I absolutely agree. And some of that is down to what the function and fit of the product is. So, you know, I mean, in the 1940s, relays were it. That was all you had, you know. So technology definitely has moved along. I mean, everything you're saying, I agree with all of you, because advocates, we do wireless, we do very successful monitoring equipment, you know, monitoring relays that monitor everything you can possibly think of. But what I find a lot is people's knowledge and understanding via their risk assessment of what level of safety that they want in a particular area sometimes is very lacking. And only after something happens is they go, oh, perhaps that wasn't a good idea. And then you find that safety becomes very much knee-jerk as opposed to specification. I was sitting here thinking, I can remember a little story about that. And you're both coming out almost like you're reading my mind. So I worked for Schneider for a while. I was in the car park during a fire drill. There was a power cut and Cadbury's Dairy Milk, who were just in the middle of a massive, huge, great production run of Cadbury's eggs for Easter. All of the chocolate went off in the mixers because the power stopped. And they were out of action for 4 months while they unloaded the hoppers and chiseled the chocolate out. So, you know, the necessity, who was it that said chocolate factory? It was you, David, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, yeah.
You know, I've physically seen that kind of issue that can happen. Again, that's relevant for the production line. Peter was mentioning about stuff going off in the process of production lines if you haven't got the right contingency in effect. So Peter mentioned something there a little bit about safety production lines generally and the level of safety required inside. So I'm going to put my physical safety hat on for a little bit and talk about design, because when we've got a production line, I agree that a 900 degree piece of steel going through a furnace can't stop because of the, unless someone's in on top of it, it's going to be fried as they go through the furnace. If you stop it, you're going to be in trouble. So physical security for me, stopping people from physically going where they shouldn't, unless you have to pull the lever that says, don't pull this, press the red button that says, don't press this red button, because someone's going to die, the less amount of people that you have in that strategic area, which is going to cause you a problem, the better it's going to be. There's one other thing that I want to pick up as well, is the amount of communications that we have for safety. So you think we've got CAN bus, Profibus, Profinet, Ethernet, HP, EtherCAT. All of these things exist in different parts of the same machine sometimes, in different parts of the factory sometimes. And just an open question to all of you, do you think that that's the right kind of technology, or do you think, like electricity and water generally, we should have a standard for safety communications? And that gives us the ability to focus then exactly on what we're doing from a safety industry perspective and focus all of our stuff on the same technologies.
Talking industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.